topic that came up more than once, several times. Is seeing where our goal is, seeing where we are. Different way of saying the same thing, but how do we move from where we are to where we want to go? How do we bridge the gap? How do we overcome our shortcomings? How do we overcome pride? Etc. Attachments, etc. So, that made me think of a question someone, when I was back in America, visiting in Houston, when a morning class at Doherty asked a very thoughtful question, and I'll like to speak on the theme that will address this topic. The question was, both in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, who started with material desire and ended up seeing Lord Vishnu and he became free from material desire, and Daksha, who had material desire, saw the Supreme Lord and didn't overcome his material desire. What's the difference? What makes the difference between having an opportunity, just like we're chanting the holy name, and the holy name is not different than Krishna, so we have the same opportunity as Haridas Thakur and whoever else chants the holy name. What's the difference between our becoming purified or not becoming purified by that encounter with the Supreme Lord? Because the place where we're visiting tomorrow is Mangalagiri. I'd like to speak something first about Lord Nrisingadev. There's a very nice purport. You can look it up later, the long, detailed purport, Adi Leela Chapter 5, Text 37. Where Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami discusses this, specific to Jayan Vijay coming into this world three times as demons, Shishupal and, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, Ravana and Kumbhakarna, Shishupal and Dantavakra. Although Hiranyakashipu saw Lord Nrisingadev and he was killed by the nails of Lord Nrisingadev, why he didn't become fully purified? Why did he just go back to Godhead? In the purport, Prabhupada explains that, in short, Hiranyakashipu was attached. He was so attached to his opulence that when he saw Lord Nrisingadev, he thought, this is some kind of a being with mystic power. Just like Ravana, he had mystic powers. So he did not... Although he was killed by the personality of Godhead and he was in the presence of the form of the personality of Godhead, he thought of the supreme personality of Godhead as a human being with mystic powers. So his sinful reactions during the life of Hiranyakashipu were neutralized, but he wasn't liberated. But he got the opportunity in his next life to come back as Ravana, with enormous opulence. And when he made the offense of kidnapping the wife of Ramchandra, thinking this is a mortal, a mere human being, Therefore, when he was killed by Ramachandra, his sins were neutralized, but he didn't rejoin his position as Jayan Vijay. And when he then came as Shishupal, he was seeing Krishna also. But seeing Krishna, his opulence was so great and his envy was so great that he was just offending Krishna. But because he always thought of Krishna and he always spoke Krishna's name at least 100 times in the assembly hall, he was becoming purified. And when he was killed by Krishna, he achieved Sayuja Mukti of the lesser kind. He merged into the body of Krishna. So, seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead or coming in contact with the Holy Name, the form of the Lord in the Holy Name, Kali Kali Namarupe, Krishna Avatar. In this age of Kali, that form of the Lord that is for purifying everyone is the chanting of the Holy Name. So something else needs to be there. Prabhupada on occasion said, just a couple of handful of persons on earth, although many persons saw Krishna when he appeared, very few of them understood that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The classic is the washerman, when Krishna was entering into Mathura. And he requested, my dear washerman, you look at the Sanskrit and the way that Krishna spoke to the washerman and to the florist were almost identical. My dear sir, it will be very pious of you to give in charity some of the clothing that you're carrying. You will receive great benefit by making this act of charity. Kindly offer something for Balaram and my cowherd boyfriends. And blinded by the pride of his position, these are the clothes of the king. You better watch out. If the king even had a hint of an idea that you're asking for his clothes, you'll be dead. Don't mess with Kamsa. Get along now. Leave while you still can. So Krishna smiled and he relieved the washerman of both the clothes and his head with his Sudarshan Chakra. And then he held up some nice clothes and said, Balaram, these will be very good for you. Balaram said, oh, these will be very good for you. And the cowherd boys took the rest. And they went waltzing into Mathura, dressed in the king's clothes. But the florist, it was just the opposite. He knew that Krishna was coming and he saved the very best of the flowers that he had. And as soon as Krishna said the same words, immediately, here's a garland for you and here's one for Balaram. My house has been blessed by your coming to my home and accepting some service from me. My life is now complete. Because there was no malice in his heart, no pride in his heart. But coming in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we could say the goal of devotional service is to see Krishna face to face and engage in his service. Or we may have an opportunity of coming face to face with the Supreme Lord and not become purified. And that was the case with Daksha. We find two descriptions of Daksha, because there are two, you could say, incarnations of Daksha. I say Daksha Part 1 and Daksha Part 2. Daksha Part 1 is the one who married Sati. Lord Shiva married the daughter of Daksha, Sati. And Daksha was very proud. Proud of his so many sacrifices. He was expert. That's what Daksha means. He was expert in sacrificial performances. And he looked at Lord Shiva, his son-in-law, and thought, my daughter shouldn't be married to such a person. He's not a worthy husband for my daughter. So instead of appreciating Lord Shiva, he specifically hatched a plan to offend him, deliberately to offend him, to demean him. He arranged for a big yajna and invited everybody except his daughter and her daughter's husband, Lord Shiva and Sati. It's a very nice description as Sati is looking into the sky the afternoon and evening before the yajna, and all these vimanas are coming in for a landing. Must have had a nice big airport or something. I saw that when I was in traveling in Alabama at the University of Mississippi. They made a whole new airport for Barack Obama to come and have a debate before the election. They just like made a whole airport for him and his entourage and the whole thing. Anyway, so Daksha could have. Anyway, the Vimanas were coming in for a landing. And she was seeing and describing to her husband, oh, see all the beautiful ornaments and attire and all these stately, wonderful people, all the demigods and their queens and wives, and oh, it must be a grand festival. It would be really wonderful to be a participant in the festival. She didn't say, I want to go. She did everything but say, I want to go. And indirectly, in so many indirect ways, she was inspiring her husband to say, please go, it's your father. You can go to the big festival. But instead, he cautioned her and said, the very nature of this event is going to be something that will, if you go, you'll be very sorry, very, very inauspicious to begin something on an inauspicious note doesn't likely give an auspicious result. She didn't want to hear that answer. She wanted to hear a different one. And so, like with a buyer beware notice, he said, go ahead. But you'll see. Why don't you mark my words? So she went to the yajna. And not only her husband was not there, but Daksha began making remarks about Lord Shiva. And when Sati understood that clearly the mentality of her father, she decided, I want nothing to do with you. And the only thing to do with you is this body is connected to your body, so I give up this body. And she sat in a fire, and her body burned to ashes. The associates of Lord Shiva that had accompanied Sati became very aggravated and spoke very strongly to Daksha's camp. And they began attacking them, and Daksha's camp attacked back, and as a Daksha Yajna, a big mess. Lord Shiva came and created a Virabhadra, huge personality with a big chopper. Grabbed Daksha, put his head in a chopping block. Pew! Thus ended Daksha. And everyone was shocked. Look at this bloody mess. Daksha without a head. Lord Brahma came and pleaded, calm down, it's over, and give Daksha his life back. So the Ashvini Kumaras arranged for a goat's head to go on the body of Daksha, and he came back to life. Very embarrassing. He was very beautiful. Now he had a nice human body, but a goat's head. And through his goat's head, he came before Lord Shiva, and as you're supposed to do when you make offense to a Vaishnav, he profusely apologized for his offense. He said, I had no understanding of who you really are. I saw you by external means, but now I understand. I've made a very, very grievous mistake. Please forgive me. And Daksha's, or Lord Shiva's Ashutosh, he's easily pleased and easily angry. He forgave. So the reaction for offenses that we make may be relieved by that act of receiving forgiveness from that Vaishnava we've offended. But the tendency may not be relieved to do the same thing again. That's a problem. For Daksha, it proved to be a really big problem. We don't hear more about Daksha until the sixth canto, when Daksha again takes birth in a new improved version, Daksha part 2. And that description in the sixth canto comes as a continuation from one of the final chapters of the fourth canto is Narada Muni's deliverance of King Prachinibari. And prior to delivering the king, Prachinibari, King Prachinibari sent his sons, the Prachetas, to go perform austerities to qualify themselves to become capable of producing good praja. He was also something of a prajapati, and he wanted his sons to assist him in that service. So the Prachetas, the immediate reply was, yes, sir, immediately. But they didn't just go find someone to marry and produce children. They spent the next 10,000 years performing austerities. And their austerity was process of meditation whereby they suspend the breathing process. And one of the ways to do that is underwater. Just like we know that who was the Muni who was underwater in the Sobri Muni. So the Prachetas were about to enter the sea for 10,000 years. But before they did so, out of the sea came Lord Shiva with his entourage and said to them, you pleased me very much by your cooperation amongst one another and by your obedience to your father. So I've come before you. I'm showing you my form, which is very rarely seen. And in addition, I want to give you this special benediction. I want to give you the very same stotras or prayers that I recite so that when you're underwater and not just qualify yourselves to be sense controlled and thereby be able to produce good praja, but I want you to become God conscious because I meditate upon Lord Vishnu, and here's the prayer of meditation upon Lord Vishnu. So they received Lord Shiva's mercy. having received Lord Shiva's mercy, when they entered the water and they were in the midst of their meditation, Lord Vishnu came before them, riding on Garuda, standing on Garuda. And the Prajetas offered prayers to him, and Lord Vishnu offered his benediction to them. So they had received the blessings of both Lord Shiva, and then from Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu. Fast forward over to the sixth canto, they appear again. They come out of the water 10,000 years later. And because their father, King Prachinibari, had also left his duties as king and had gone to the forest for spiritual perfection under the guidance of Narada, the whole earth had become overgrown with vegetation. And the Prajetas became very, more than concerned, they became very angry. There's need for agricultural land to supply for the citizens, the population of the earth. And so by mystic power, they generated fire and wind, like human torch. Fire came from their mouths. In all directions, all the forests were being burnt to ashes. There's no fire department to come and put it out. Big problem. So the demigod in charge of vegetation is the moon. Prabhupada has taught us like that and confirmed in the Bhagavatam that to grow things, you don't not only need sunlight and water, but you need moonlight. So Soma came before the Prajetas and pleaded with them, "My dear boys, please calm down. Well, we understand your concern that there has to be agricultural land, but there's enough agricultural land. You cleared a good portion of the earth planet. Please stop. Please desist." And just as their reply was to their father, they said to Soma, "Yes, sir." Very submissive to the respectable personalities who addressed them. And to award them, he said, "You 10 brothers, I'm going to give you a qualified, because you've been undergoing austerities to produce good praja, I'm going to give you a qualified wife. Maricha is her name, and with this wife you will produce very qualified children." So this is another very different example, like the Pandavas, all 5 married one, Draupadi. Here's 10 brothers marrying one. And the son that was produced was Daksha part 2. So Daksha part 2, Daksha had the same propensities. He wanted to be a Prajapati. He wanted to produce good praja. And in the course of producing good praja, he wasn't satisfied with the outcome. And so he decided that he would leave his household situation and go into a very secluded place, sacred place, and offer certain prayers, Hamsa Guhya prayers, to the Supreme Personality of God. There's a whole chapter in the sixth canto, the Hamsa Guhya prayers, very beautiful prayers, glorifying Lord Vishnu. After some time of purification and elevation of consciousness, Lord Vishnu appeared on the back of Garuda, showing 8 arms. Daksha offered wonderful prayers, beautiful prayers, glorification of Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu spoke, saying, "The austerities that you've done are for the purpose of producing good praja. I understand that your intent is to render service to me. And so I'm very pleased. He didn't highlight, I also know that you're very attached, but he was seeing the devotion, the pleasing Lord Vishnu portion of his effort, and similarly made an arrangement that Daksha would have a very qualified wife, Akshini, who is the daughter of the Apsara Pramlocha, who in her company you will produce very, very quality children. And so it happened. The Haryashvas were born of Akshini and Daksha. And when they were of mature age, 10,000 sons, that's a lot of sons, he sent them to a place called Narayana Saras, a place where the Sindhu River enters into the ocean, and at that time that area was a sacred place where many sages would go, and they would undergo austerities for purification, for being effective in their service to the Supreme Lord. Narada Muni heard the good news. 10,000 sons of Daksha have gone to Narayana Saras. So he paid a visit. And Narada in many, many ways he's expert. He's an empowered incarnation. He's a Shaktivesh avatar of the Supreme Lord. So he very carefully first examined the quality of these sons. The way that he examined them was he presented a very intricate riddle and asked them to explain the riddle. And if you read the verses without looking at the purport, you wouldn't know what the riddle means. It would remain a riddle. But they understood right away and explained the meaning of the riddle. So he could understand. Their consciousness is clear. As a result, they don't require, they're not attached. They don't require going through the process of household life. They can enter directly into my bhakti program. So he invited them all to his ashram. And he went to inform Daksha of the good news. Hey, Daksha, guess what? Your 10,000 sons just joined my bhakti program. Daksha was very upset with Narada, but he didn't say anything. That becomes a problem. I mean, having ill feelings towards a Vaishnava, even if you don't say it, it's not good, because eventually it will come out. Don't hold ill will towards a Vaishnava. Daksha didn't attend Bhagavad Gita classes and learn Vaishnav behavior. He was feeling very badly towards Narada. So then, next time, he produced the Savalashvas, 1,000 sons, and when they were of age, same procedure, except he warned them, watch out for Daksha, watch out for Narada. He's got a bhakti program, and he'll try to sign you up for his bhakti program. And that's not the service that's being entrusted to you. Sure enough, when they went to Narayan Saras, Narada was there. And he hardly had to say anything. Even they were warned, look out, watch out for him. He just was describing how wonderfully their 10,000 brothers were doing in spiritual life. And were becoming very elevated and were very happy. And the Savalashas signed up for the bhakti program. And Narada went back to inform Daksha of the good news. Hey, Daksha, how wonderful. Now your second batch of sons have entered my ashram, practicing devotional service. Narada knew exactly the mentality of Daksha. He wasn't concerned about what he might say or do. He was simply interested in one thing, delivering daksha from his mortal attachment. So what followed was, daksha insulted Narada, started calling him bad names and criticizing him in so many ways. What kind of sadhu are you, wearing saffron and appearing in the renounced order, when you don't understand the first thing about dharma and principles of religion? You're simply a cheater in the guise of a sadhu. Because for someone to go, his idea was, for someone to get on the other side of material desire, you have to pass through it in a regulated fashion and do your yajnas and suffer in a regulated way. And on the other side, then you can be detached, and then you can take renounced order of life. But you've deprived my sons of that opportunity. You are to be cursed. He started bragging about, I've done so many of this yajna, and so many of that yajna, and so many of this yajna. What yajnas have you done? I'm the sadhu. And I curse you, you imitation sadhu, that you should not be able to stay at any place for more than 3 days. Now, for a sannyasi, that's standard. Jeez, we've been here for 2 days and we're leaving tomorrow. And then another place for 3 days, and we're going for another place for 3 days. And it's like, that's the sannyas life is like that. Narada was very happy. Oh, thank you. And Narada didn't leave. Narada stayed. It doesn't give the detail what the next things that happened, but Narada's interest was to remove from Daksha's heart. He's expert, so it doesn't say what he did. But he's expert at extracting people from their attached position and bringing them to a devotional position. So although he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he didn't become purified. Rather, he was offensive to such an elevated devotee, Narada Muni. And quite distinct is Dhruva, who also started with strong material desire. He not only had strong material desire, his motivation was get back at his stepmother. And for that matter, his father. I want a kingdom! I want a kingdom that's better than my father. Better than my father's father. Better than my father's father's father. Who was Dhruva's father? Uttanapada. He was ruling the earth. Who was Uttanapada's father? Swayambhuvamanu. He's ruling the universe. Who was Swayambhuvamanu's father? Lord Brahma, firstborn living being in the creation. And he wanted a kingdom better than Lord Brahma. Vaikuntha. Like child play. I want a kingdom. I want a big one. Big kingdom. And when he asked his mother how to get such a kingdom, she said, if Lord Vishnu gives you his blessings, anything can happen. Oh, where do I find Lord Vishnu? I don't know. I'm just a woman in the palace. I don't know about these things. But I hear the sages, they go to the forest and somehow they find Lord Vishnu. I'm leaving right now for the forest. I'm going to find Lord Vishnu so I can get that kingdom. So he had strong material desire. It wasn't Shuddha Bhakti at all. It was very intense. Sakam Bhakti. And when he went into the forest, he couldn't find Lord Vishnu. He found trees, and he found wild animals, and snakes, and all kinds of insects. Sure, he found some mosquitoes. Don't have to come to Rajamundry to find mosquitoes. There's mosquitoes everywhere. But he couldn't find Lord Vishnu. Meanwhile, Narada Muni heard the king... son, Uttanapada's son, just a small boy, 5 years old, left the royal palace in order to find Vishnu. Let me go there. So at once he went, and he searched and he found. There, a little boy, Dhruva, 5 years old. And he came directly before Dhruva. Dhruva understood, this is Narada, he's just a small boy. But being in the presence of Narada, he offered his respects and presented his request. Can you help me find Lord Vishnu? I want a kingdom. My mother said, maybe he can give me a kingdom. Narada examined. Important. When you're presenting Krishna consciousness to others, you have to know who the other is. You have to know your audience. You have to know the other person. Some sense of examining or understanding the nature of the other person is necessary to be effective. Narada is effective. So he was examining Dhruva. And first, he was testing him to see, is this something he really means or is just child's play? So he told him, you're just a small boy. Very dangerous here in the forest, and great yogis, they spend sometimes lifetimes and still they're not successful in finding Lord Vishnu. Why don't you go back to the palace, grow up, when you're a little older you can come back and look for Lord Vishnu. Dhruva was silent. Well, if you're very determined to find Lord Vishnu, you have to be in the quality of goodness. And this mood that you're in right now, it's not the quality of goodness. And you won't be successful. You have to give up this get-back mentality, Dhruva. Dhruva was silent. He offered other challenges and discouraged him. Very difficult. Very difficult. Dhruva heard his various advices and said, Narada, all the words that you've spoken are perfectly correct and true, but they haven't entered my heart. That can be a problem. And good advice, we can recognize it's good advice, but it doesn't enter our heart. And he said that my nature is, I'm a Kshatriya. And I've been harmed cruelly by my stepmother. I want a kingdom. And you're a saintly person. I'm sure somehow you can help me get my kingdom. You can help me find Lord Vishnu. You're a great Vaishnav, you're a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Surely you can help me find. Kindly give your mercy upon me. And help me find Vishnu. So Narada could understand. This boy is very determined. He wants one thing and one thing only. The association of Lord Vishnu. With that determination, he'll achieve Lord Vishnu. So he gave him the means. to achieve Lord Vishnu. He taught him the process. He gave him a mantra. He gave him a place to perform this activity in Mahavan in Vrindavan. Maybe some of you have been there, the Dhruva Tila in Vrindavan. Very nice place. Very secluded, even today, very secluded, nice hill, very quiet, serene, removed. And there's where Dhruva went to perform the activity that Narada engaged him in. Critical point. After hearing from Narada, he circumambulated Narada 3 times, paid his obeisances, and felt enormous gratitude in his heart for the kindness that had just been shown to him. He hadn't achieved anything yet, other than the means and the mercy of Narada. That gratitude that Narada, that Dhruva felt, continued to grow as he went and performed very extreme austerities. In 6 months, he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He saw him in trance, in meditation within his heart. Because he was fixed in this trance of meditation, and like the Prajetas, he had suspended his breathing process. It was somehow having this effect that the circulation of air within the whole universe had stopped. And even the demigods were choking. Lord Vishnu, help. We can't breathe. What's going on in the universe? Oh, don't worry. It's just a small boy, 5 years old. He's doing some austerities, and I'm going to go there personally and take care of the situation. Don't worry. So he appeared directly before Dhruva. When Dhruva was in trance, that form of the Lord that he was seeing within his heart, suddenly that form disappeared. And he was startled because he was in ecstasy. And then suddenly gone. So his eyes opened and looked before him, and that same form was standing in front of him. Same. The Lord in the heart and Shiradakshai Vishnu who resides in Svetadvip. Same. Not two of the same, but the same. And he was stunned. Seeing the Supreme Lord face to face, he paid his obeisances and stood up and paid his obeisances and stood up and he wanted to say something. But he was stunned. He couldn't speak. So Lord Vishnu touched his head with his conch shell, spiritualizing the body of Dhruva, and he spoke beautiful prayers to Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu then spoke to him. I've come before you because you have pleased me so much by your unalloyed devotion to me. So much so that the kingdom that you had desired, it's awaiting you. There's a throne already waiting in that abode of mine where you can reside. But I have some other service for you first. For 60,000 years, you need to rule your father's kingdom here on earth. King Uttanapada has gone to the forest. Well, no, will be going to the forest to achieve spiritual perfection, just as you have done, inspired by your example. Dhruva liberated his father. Uttanapada, when Dhruva left home, was feeling terrible anxiety. Imagine, those of you that have children, if your child left home at 5 years old, totally upset because you had just neglected to give him protection. He just left, went to the forest. Uttanapada was devastated. Narada knew that. After he spoke to Dhruva, he went to King Uttanapada, who was like, he couldn't even sit on the throne, he couldn't eat, he couldn't sleep, he was terribly distressed. And he reassured the king, "Don't worry, your son is, not only your son is safe, but your son will come back soon, a Mahabhagavata devotee of the Lord, a perfectly realized, God-realized soul. And he will rejoin you within a short time. So please be composed, rest assured with my words, and carry on with your duties." He didn't give him transcendental knowledge. Not at that time. There was another plan. And the other plan was when Dhruva came back, through the association of Dhruva, Uttanapada became so inspired in devotional service that he decided to turn the kingdom over to Dhruva when Dhruva was of age, and he went to the forest and did what Dhruva did, following Dhruva's example. So now back to the theme question that relates to the topic that we were discussing. If one is in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as was Daksha, and as was Dhruva, but in one case one becomes purified, in the other case one doesn't become purified, what makes the difference? Or in our case, we're all chanting the holy name of the Lord. Otherwise we wouldn't be here. We're Hare Krishna chanters. What's the difference for each and every one of us, or even in the course of passage of time in our lives, whether we're experiencing or not the pure holy name. And, or say it differently, how can we qualify ourselves so that we can chant the pure holy name? Because that's our contact with the Lord through His name, as well as through the deity form, as well as through the scripture, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the literary form, so that when we read Srimad Bhagavatam, we're experiencing Krishna's presence through the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Is it like just a storybook thing, and it's not real, and it's just like to get us kind of fired up, and but it's not real? That's not the case. The opportunity is there because the Supreme Lord is there, and to move into that, deeper into the house of bhakti, we heard this description from Ramananda Roy, that by hearing and dedicating oneself to that process of hearing with body, words and mind to the topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a very dedicated way, very quickly one becomes accepted by Krishna as his devotee. That means, you know, eternally. So particularly between Daksha and Dhruva, there's no description of Daksha's submission to whoever it was that taught him the Hansaguya prayers. He must have received them from some place or some person, but the attitude, the feeling in his heart towards such person, there's no mention of it at all. But in Dhruva's case, there is. The very same person, Narada Muni, who came compassionately to deliver Daksha from his embarrassing situation, simply offended Narada. And Dhruva felt deep gratitude in his heart from that which he had received, the kindness, the mercy that he had received. And that gratitude grew and grew and grew and displaced the sakama portion of his bhakti to the point where on the other side it was nishkam bhakti. He had no material desire. So this connection with the descending mercy, the line of descending mercy, is critically important. Receiving and deep feelings of gratitude for that which one has received and nurturing that to get us on the other side of our attachments, our shortcomings, our misconceptions, our, using Prabhupada's phrase, our holding back. Krishna's not just interested in what we're giving him, but what we're holding back. Our reservation in surrendering or offering our hearts to Krishna. It's through the process of descending mercy that we can get on the other side of that problem. So when we're visiting these places of pilgrimage or places where Lord Chaitanya went to visit, in each place there's something, some feedback I received from the devotees were very much appreciating how unique was the relationship between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya, and etc. These personalities in these places, as we're going further, we'll hear a lot about Ramanujacharya and his associates, and Jamunacharya and members of the Sri Sampradaya. These personalities are also, along with Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya's associates, are such exemplary personalities that one can become inspired by and pray for their mercy. And all of that has become possible, whether we're, as in my case, a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, or those who are disciples of the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, we're hanging on the mercy of our founder Acharya. So much service is being manifested, just like I mentioned, this very wonderful temple. Devotees were further complimenting how nice, how comfortable they feel at the temple and how nice the temple is. And when we go to Tirupati, we'll see another very wonderful ISKCON temple along with a very ancient temple up on Tirumala. Inspirational. I don't know how some of you felt, but I can share, going into the Simachalam temple, I was, the awe and reverence was very strong. It's a very powerful place. Just being there. I mean, it's like eternal or something. And so much devotional service, so much bhakti has been rendered there. It just vibrates. But in that particular mood, awe and reverence. Very nice. Because the bhaktas, or the devotees there, are very strong in their worship and their practices. So, we've come on pilgrimage, we've come on this yatra, to move from whatever position, whatever level of Krishna consciousness we've had, to come to another position. So this opening of our hearts and receiving the mercy, appreciating with great gratitude the kindness that Prabhupada extended to all of us, and his followers have extended to all of us, to make our progress on the path back to Godhead successful. You wouldn't even know about the path back to Godhead without that mercy. And making further steps along that path, entering more deeply into the house of bhakti, is the feeling of gratitude, genuine gratitude for the gift that we've been given, and cultivating that gift and the feeling of gratitude, it will carry us beyond these shortcomings that are presently blocking us or keeping us in our limited position of spiritual progress. So any comments or questions? He's compassionate. Double compassionate. He was compassionate for those that need not go through worldly life, but could directly achieve spiritual perfection. I mean, that's what we do as devotees. For those who are so capable, they need not go through all the tribulations of ritualistic life at best, or unregulated materialistic life at worst, sinful life, is compassion. And doing so, there's risk. Little dakshas out there that don't want their sons or daughters to become fanatics. There's risk. Prabhupada specifically says that. But that was his motivation, yes? He was learned, and he knew that offending a renounced devotee of the Lord can bring its problems. But he got on the other side of that by concluding, you're not a sadhu at all. You're a sadhu. I'm the sadhu. Pride. He just became overwhelmed with pride. That's what happened the second time around. He became blinded by pride. So well. You got it.
And then some of us, I speak for myself, I feel very grateful for having you as my spiritual master. Progress is very slow.
Nurture. Take that and nurture it. Remember the phrase, Vaisheshika's phrase? Where attention goes, energy flows. So pay attention to that and grow it. Doesn't mean become obsessed or, blinded. But in a mature way, deepening one's feelings of gratitude. Wherever wherever you find an advanced devotee, a truly advanced devotee, that's their mood. And it's not like, you know, there's a limit to it. There's appropriate and inappropriate ways of expressing, but there's no limit to it. I mean, I really liked that quote. That's why I read it 3 times by Lochan Das in the beginning of his Chaitanya Mangala. You know, I'm the servant of Narahari Thakur. By his mercy, I'm writing this Chaitanya Mangala because it's my heart's desire to glorify Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it's right back to, I am a servant of Narahari Thakur. He is my life and soul. It says something about his heart. His whole book isn't filled like that. But, you know, that's the starting point. Then comes his service of writing. And he loved to write. He describes. Anyway, don't need to repeat. Having heard, it's about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from Damodar Pandit, who knew the writings of Murari Gupta. It entered his heart. And as it grew, that feeling for Lord Chaitanya grew. It took shape of songs. So whatever we hear, it may take shape of something. We may not be a songwriter. We may not be a literary person. We are whatever we are, and it comes out however it comes out. But for the position of spiritual elevation, it's from the place of gratitude and the mood of service, based upon that gratitude. That's an elevated Vaishnava. So we're wherever we are, we're hearing about elevated Vaishnavas to become, to take another step into that interior of the house of bhakti. So nurture that. And some of the other things that we've been describing, if you feel that there's I'm not progressing so nicely, look and see, am I holding on to something? Is there some attachment? I've mentioned this. We've been going over this a few times. If there's something that keeps coming up and coming up and coming, Dharmendra was his question yesterday. Something that keeps coming up, pay attention to it. And don't just have a wage of war without the feelings, without spiritual empowerment. And the spiritual empowerment comes from that core position. Okay? And then we can progress instead of holding on to some material attachment or conception or impurity. Someone was saying pride. Someone else, it might be something else. We need descending mercy. We need to connect with that. Feel it. Grow it. And serve from that position. That's why I read those passages from Shukadeva Goswami. It's beautiful. Someone else? Yes? Oh, I'm sorry. You want to? You go ahead. From the heart. It doesn't even need to be expressed verbally. It will come out. If it's from the heart, it will come out in everything that you do. Hanuman Manobir. Each of us have endowments or gifts given to us by Krishna. Something, or several somethings. It'll come out in the form of expressing those things in loving service to Krishna. You see this wonderful temple. Do you think that's it for Satyagopinath? He's got a couple more projects emerging from his cornucopia of inspirations and some resources and facilities, and just has to keep his health together and burn himself out. Each of us has our... So through the medium of service... But it will shine and bring pure bhakti into the lives of others if it's coming from that place. And otherwise, it won't be the same. Something will happen. There are lots of things happening in this world that aren't generating pure devotion in the individual performer's hearts or in the hearts of others who their lives come in contact with. Each of us has some gift. Yes, Narada.
Hi, Krishna. We were hearing about not finding faults. But there should be, at the same time, there should be some discrimination.
Absolutely.
What is correct, what is wrong?
That's absolutely. We're enjoined by Scripture to do that.
So what?
Fault finding is different than understanding what is and what isn't. It's the mood. Narada understood Daksha's disposition. He wasn't fault finding, but he was discriminating. And his mood was, let me find the best way to be of service to Daksha. Etc. So the distinction is discerning, and then what's the purpose behind that discernment? What's the motive? To what end is that going to be deployed? If it's to serve the other person in the best possible way, fine. Then it's not fault finding. I'm listening. I don't see any problem in anything what you just said. If it's not your position to do something in relation to that individual, then you're not fault-finding with that person. Just the medium of service is not open. So you wish them well. May Krishna be kind upon this nice devotee, that whatever the circumstances that they're dealing with, they'll become gradually elevated and purified. Life is filled with such things. Like, you know, one thing that's coming to mind is that family that we rode in the car with. And, you know, so the mother Subal dealt with them. I didn't have to say anything. I was just chanting japa. He was dealing with them in such a nice manner that I think that they're going to start thinking more favorably about ISKCON and the ISKCON temple in San Jose when they get to their back to where they're going, because that's where they live. And their little yogi son, you know, if they start to become visiting the temple, he'll start to associate with devotees instead of, you know, whatever he was in his previous life. So, whatever is appropriate. And at least wish them well. Life is filled with such things. The most important thing in those in your direct dealings or those that you see that you don't have any direct interaction with those persons is your own purity of heart. Because there isn't purity of heart, interact with others or lock yourself in a room where you're not interacting with others. And the heart is impure. And it's unhappiness and frustration or unhappiness and frustration of different flavors. The first business is to make your own heart pure. To what you described, there's nothing detrimental. It's not that to become a devotee you have to turn your intelligence to the off position. And you can't see anything, you can't discriminate anything, because you might, see something that's going on that shouldn't be going on. Read Prabhupada's purports. He describes many things that shouldn't be going on, that are going on. But what's the purpose of doing that? He's in a position of a sadhu, an acharya, who is instructing the world. We're not. We can discriminate, but we're not instructing. We're being trained by those instructions how to see the world properly, what's right and what's wrong, giving us the strength of discernment. Now, what's needed internally is a pure heart. Now, what do you do with that discernment? You serve. Because that's who you are. You're not a controller or an enjoyer or a judge or a jury or a fixer of other people's problems or a critic of other people. You're a servant. To learn how to serve according to your position in society. Yes? It sounds like you've answered your own question. We don't imitate, but we follow the example of. And if you're finding it hard for you to tolerate a certain circumstance because it's provoking, think of those role models that you so much adore and respect, and think of those persons. And how would they, in this circumstance, behave? Would they behave like this, get irritated and aggravated by something provoking circumstance? But by thinking of those personalities, it elevates your consciousness. And you receive their mercy. You develop qualities like them. These most exalted personalities are someone more proximate. Someone who you regularly associate with, who you revere and respect, or your spiritual master. And were they in this situation, would they feel provoked and irritated and bent out of shape? Or would they be very thoughtful and assessing the situation, how to be best of service to the situation and the people involved in the situation? Cultivate the mood of service. It's easy to tolerate. It's just one circumstance of service or another circumstance of service or another circumstance of service. But life is variegated circumstances of service. Some are like this and some are like that. Service. See the situation as a service and you can smile. Okay. I think we'll end here and have kirtan. Oh, we have a couple of announcements. You got the microphone. You want the microphone? Govinda, let's have some kirtan for a while. Okay, let's have kirtan. Tell a good question quickly.
Guru Maharaj, in provocating situations, he went to forest and did tapasya. Similarly, Radha Maharaj, he maintained fixed consciousness. But while we perform devotional service in provocating situations, I'm having ill feelings. How to overcome that?
Think of Dhruva. I mean, that's just same as his question. Just answered it. Shorter form.